Global roaming is expanding to weekdays.
We did try to stay weekly. The news said no. So 5 days a week it is.
It's serious reporting on global events. Plus you're invited for a daily radio coffee table chat with me, Geraldine Doogue.
And with me, Hamish McDonald. And in 2026, Latika Burke and Kylie Morris.
Together we'll explore the global forces reshaping our world in mostly calm conversation.
Calm, Geraldine. Global roaming. Search for Global Roaming on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music and more.
Just a heads up, there is some strong language in this episode and some somewhat gruesome descriptions. The court has heard that before his death, Geoffrey McLean played golf, was good at drinking, and had an at times volatile relationship with Cherie Glastonbury, the woman accused of his murder. I'm Stephen Stockwell. This is episode 3 of the case of the Wheelieben murder.
A gruesome discovery on vacant land in Adelaide's north. Police say the remains belong to missing man Geoffrey McLean.
When Geoffrey's body was located, it had been dismembered. It was located in a wheelie bin.
Four people have been arrested in relation to his death.
A woman who's accused of murdering her ex-partner.
They're hopeful they can provide relief to his family.
As the trial of Cherie Glastonbury and Mark Murphy gets to the end of its second week, I have learnt a bit about Geoffrey McLean and a lot about the bins on Eastview Street. In the courtroom as all of this unfolds is Eva Blandis, the ABC's court reporter in Adelaide. G'day, Eva.
Hello, Stocky.
We've knocked through a fair few witnesses over the last few days. Can you wrap up what we've heard in 60 seconds or so for us?
Yeah, so we've heard from quite a lot of residents along Eastview Street. So that's where the Murphys lived with Lynette Sexton. So we're sort of starting to get a bit of a picture about how that wheelie bin from the next door neighbours at 17B Eastview Street got to that vacant lot and ultimately had Geoffrey McLean's torso in it. Mm. So we're getting a bit of an idea of that street and the residents along there. We're also starting to get an idea of the man that Geoffrey McLean was. We've heard from one of his best mates, Alan. He has brought some description and clarification about who we're actually talking about here. It's not just a torso in a wheelie bin, it's Geoffrey McLean.
Mm. Yeah, it's been a kind of pretty revealing few days, actually, Eva. Eastview Street, if you're playing at home, is where the Murphy brothers live. So that's Mark Murphy and Peter Murphy. Mark Murphy, along with Cherie Glastonbury, accused of the murder of Geoffrey McLean. So just so you can place that. But yeah, Eva, as well as the bins, we did get this sense of who Geoffrey McLean kind of was. This was from one of his friends, a guy called Alan Matthews. He'd known Geoffrey McLean, I think, for about 4 years or so prior to his death. How did they meet?
Yeah, so they met in a keno line and they ended up playing golf together and they'd hang out at the Regency Tavern. And it sounds from Alan's evidence, it sounds like there was a bit of a sort of community at the Regency Tavern. They were regulars. They'd hang around and they sort of knew everyone who worked there. At some stage, Alan sort of described that, you know, the staff will hug him. They're quite a tight-knit bunch.
Yeah, interesting hearing about, you know, the kind of the golfing habits, I guess, as well. You know, then playing golf kind of regularly. And I mean, if you're listening from overseas, you're unfamiliar with keno. It's a mainstay in pubs around Australia. It's basically kind of like a sort of a bingo style game. You're picking a bunch of numbers off of a sheet and then, you know, betting that those numbers are going to be coming up on the screen as it's played around the country. Kind of like a centralized system. I've realized I've never had to explain keno to anyone before. So hopefully that gives you a sense of what it is. And if you want to learn a bit more, you can jump in and maybe just Google it or something like that. We heard that Geoffrey McLean was dating someone called Anna when Alan first met him. That lasted a couple of years. Then that relationship ended. Mm-hmm. And Geoffrey McLean, you know, for lack of a better word, shacked up with Cherie Glastonbury after that. Alan was kind of a witness to that relationship. You know, he knew Geoffrey prior to it. He saw Geoffrey in the relationship with Cherie. What did he have to say about it?
Well, he said that he sort of would see them every now and then, but there were occasions where Cherie did go to that hotel, the Regency Tavern. He described, because of that really close relationship, the barmaids would hug Geoffrey McLean, and Alan said that that would really annoy Cherie, and she'd get quite angry. Mm. At one stage, he actually said that Cherie called Alan, and was really quite angry and upset, asking where Geoffrey was. And at one stage said she was going to, mind my language, but talked about fucking with his bikes. We know he had some Harley Davidsons, and from what Alan said, he was able to calm Cherie down and sort of said, there's nothing going on there.
Yeah, right. Was this described as like a jealous thing?
Yeah, so he described it as she would get quite jealous. Mm. So it's sort of it laid a bit of a picture for the couple's relationship.
Mm. Did Alan have anything to say about, you know, whether or not Geoffrey McLean was checking out with one of the barmaids?
No, he said that Geoffrey was a very straightforward guy. He was black and white. If he didn't want to be with Cherie, he would have told her. So, he very much denied all of that and sort of said, you know, there's nothing to worry about here, and was able to calm her down.
Yeah, okay. So doesn't sound like in the end that she, and again, pardon my language here, ended up fucking with his bikes in that instance.
Yes, no. He said that she let that go, which I'm sure at the time Geoffrey was very relieved.
Yeah, I can imagine. Two Harley Davidsons, had a bit of a collection of vehicles actually. Two Harley Davidsons, a Holden Maloo Ute, and like a Heritage Ford Fairlane, I think as well, were some of the things that Alan was talking about when he was asked about the kind of various vehicles that Geoffrey McLean owned. What else did we learn about Geoffrey McLean from Alan's evidence? Because it's not all this kind of like positive, rosy figure.
Yeah, so we also heard that he was good at drinking. So that's sort of what he referred to. We can sort of infer from that what we wish. We also did hear that he was a meth user. Mm-hmm. He saw him smoke it a few times in a glass pipe. Mm-hmm. He never saw him inject it, but he did say that Geoffrey told him that he had done that before.
Okay.
So, yeah, it does start to paint a bit of a picture of who Geoffrey was. But as I said before, it was sort of reiterated that he's a very black and white guy. There was no grey area with Geoffrey.
Yeah. I mean, if we heard in the prosecution openings that Cherie Glastonbury had said that Geoffrey McLean had been violent towards her on occasions, and there was an occasion that the prosecution referred to in their opening where police attended the house at one point and saw that Cherie had bruises on her arm, did we hear anything from Alan about anything that he'd heard about Geoffrey relating to that kind of behaviour?
No, he hasn't. At this stage, he hasn't actually been asked about that, but he is still continuing with his evidence later today. So we're only halfway through, so we're not sure what more will come from that.
Got it, yeah. And, you know, Alan Matthews, this guy had known Geoffrey McLean for 4 years prior to his death. It seemed like they were actually pretty tight, pretty close friends. They were playing golf kind of regularly. They were hanging out at the pub, as you've talked about. This got pretty emotional at times as Alan was kind of recounting his relationship with Geoffrey.
Yeah, Alan choked up a few times in the dock, but got quite emotional when he was asked the type of relationship he had with Geoffrey, and he described them as really good friends, you know, the best of mates. And that was a really emotional moment, I think, in the courtroom. It's been the first time we've actually heard about Geoffrey, and it was quite moving to actually hear some of these things about Geoffrey and to see the emotion through someone who cared about him, that people really are affected by this, and it goes further than just those four people sitting in the dock.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, yeah, as you say, up to this point, you know, we haven't heard anything that just the first the jury had heard about who Geoffrey McLean was, and, you know, we're limited in what we can talk about as to what the jury has heard. So it's the first opportunity we've had and we've heard about who Geoffrey McLean was. You know, most of the time in the pod has been us talking about how he was a torso found in a wheelie bin. And that wheelie bin and, you know, all that did form part of the evidence over the last few days as well. One of the more gruesome pieces of evidence was actually from the, you know, one of the guys from the South Australian Police Forensic Section who was tasked with kind of sifting through the bin after it was brought back to the lab from the field. Eva, how did they go about this?
So we heard from David Veldhoen, who is a sergeant, or was a sergeant at the Forensic Response Unit in the South Australian Police, And as we spoke about in the last episode, that wheelie bin was put into a body bag rather than it being dismantled in that vacant lot.
Mm.
So he sort of talked through how they had to empty the bin and they put something underneath the bin to catch everything as it all came out.
Mm.
And the jury was shown some pictures of the things that were in that bin. There was some disposable gloves and there was that quilt, which we have discussed before.
Mm.
And they were all covered by that liquid that was found at the bottom of the bin, that the bodily fluids of Jeffrey McLean.
Yeah. The bin itself has become a bit of a central character over the last couple of days at evidence as well. Basically, you know, people on Eastview Street, which is the street that Mark Murphy and Peter Murphy lived on, along with Lynette Sexton. So Mark Murphy accused of murder along with Cherie Glastonbury, and then Peter Murphy and Lynette Sexton accused of assisting an offender, which is why they're in part of this trial as well, all living on this one street. And we've heard from people along that street, all people describing various incidences with their bins, people walking along the street, opening bins, things like that. I want to start with the owner of the bin that Jeffrey McLean was found in. Who was this bloke?
So we've got Darren Tang and his wife, Jasmine. So they were living in number 19 Eastview Street, which is right next door to 17B, just for a reminder, so we're getting a little bit of an idea.
Mm-hmm.
So they were on the left side of the Murphys and Lynette Sexton.
Got it.
So they'd been neighbours for what Darren estimated for about 4 to 5 years. He'd seen them around and was aware of who they were, but that was sort of the extent of what he knew about them.
Mm-hmm. One of the interesting things, bit of a side note, is how little the people on this street knew about their neighbours. A number of people asked, would you recognise your neighbour if you saw them in the street? And some of them just flat out said no. So for Darren to recognise, and I think at times even had conversations with Mark and Peter Murphy, it was actually a bit refreshing in some of the evidence. But
definitely.
Yeah, at some point his bin goes missing. I mean, how do we know it's his bin to start with?
So as you've said, I'm also learning a lot about bins. So each bin has serial numbers and they're then linked to the house that they belong to. So, yeah, I didn't actually realise that bins belong to a specific house, but they do.
Yep.
So that's how they were able to link it back.
Mm. Yeah, I've been looking more closely at bins over the last week or two since getting into all of this. And, you know, Darren, when talking about his bin going missing, actually couldn't be that specific around the timing. Like, he didn't really know when it was. He was sort of like, you know, kind of struggled almost to nail down the time.
Yeah, so what we actually learned was that Darren and Jasmine had two green bins, one in their backyard and one in their front yard. So they didn't realise it was missing until they were mowing the front lawn.
Mm.
And, you know, I think it was Darren who said he went in and said, Jasmine, have you seen the green bin? And she hadn't. So it was just one of those things. I mean, when I go home, I don't sort of count my bins. So,
no.
So I think it was just one of those things. But they did say they think it was sometime around September or October of 2022.
Yeah, right. Okay. And just to kind of put all this in a bit of a timeline, Jeffrey McLean goes missing effectively end of August. Am I right in that? And his body is discovered in late October?
That's right. So a bit of a background reminder, Jeffrey McLean was last seen on August 18th. It wasn't until August 29th that he was reported missing by Cherie Glastonbury. And then we have a bit of a jump in time to October 24th that same year when that wheelie bin was found.
Got it. As well as Darren, yeah, as I mentioned, we had a bunch of people from Eastview Street talking about their bins. Anyone else of note that we should get into?
So we also heard from Kevin and Bryony Carroll.
Mm.
So they lived at 21 Eastview Street, which is two houses down.
Mm-hmm.
So they told the court that at one stage they were awoken in the early hours of the morning and heard someone playing around with their bin. So Kevin ended up going out to investigate and saw those two people having a little look around their bin and obviously confronted them from a distance. So he didn't go up to them but confronted them, telling them to leave his bin alone. And we did actually hear from them that they described them as a woman with fair blonde hair and described the man with her as round.
Round?
Yes, yes. So I think she actually sort of, Bryony, I think it was saying this and said, oh, you know, she went to say, I don't want to. She was very hesitant using that word, but as we know, when we're giving evidence, all the sort of niceties have to go out the door.
Was she eventually kind of pushed towards saying that she thought the person was fat? Is that where we were going here?
No, not quite, just, okay. Just round.
Okay, got it. All right. I was thinking a bit about some of Bryony's evidence. She was watching from the window during a lot of this, right? So she's kind of moving back and forth from the bedroom and living room to kind of peer through and see what Kevin was doing out there.
Yeah, it was quite funny, actually. There was a little bit of light relief there. Bryony described the woman older than she was, and the prosecutor asked her how old she was, and she admitted she was 50.
Okay, right.
It was a little bit awkward there, and we got a few little laughs. So as we have discussed previously on this podcast, sometimes it's just really nice to have a little giggle here and there about silly little things.
Yeah, the general rule of, you know, decorum, don't ask a woman her age.
Yeah, exactly.
In a courtroom, you know, this is all facts. So
Yeah, it is.
That one, unfortunately, going to the side. There was a really interesting moment in Bryony's evidence where the court was played a video of her kind of going through a slideshow. So, you know, as you were talking about, she's been looking out the window watching this. And then the police have obviously gone and interviewed her and produced a slideshow. Is this kind of the modern equivalent of a lineup? Like, were they getting her to kind of go through and say if they'd seen, like, if in the person in any of those photos was the person going through her bin?
Yeah, for sure. I was really interested by this too. I've never seen this before. Mm. And, you know, you wonder if these are only the things you see in movies.
Mm.
But no, she, so both she and her husband, Kevin, were actually taken into a police station around March, 2023.
Yep.
And so they're showing a slideshow of photos. So we're all seeing this video in court. So the jury's seen this and she and he are separate, but they're showing photos.
Yep.
First of all, they go through a group of women. And then they go through a group of men. Now, she didn't make any definitive selections of who she saw, but we have heard from the prosecution and the defence that it is an agreed fact that there was a photo of Cherie in the female photos and there was a photo of Mark in the male photos.
Got it. Right. Okay. So basically you're watching a video of both Kevin and Bryony kind of leafing through these different pictures. Could you see who was in the photos?
Oh, only vaguely. Couldn't get a good look. So yeah, I wasn't even sure until we heard that agreed fact that there were photos of Cherie and Mark in there. I wasn't even sure from what I could see, but the jury definitely have a better view of that screen and will have a better copy. But sometimes it's a bit hard in the gallery as the screens are sort of on the side, because they're positioned for the jury, so it was just a bit tricky.
Got it. And, I mean, we need to be quite careful here. I mean, I really want to ask you, who did she pick and does that person look like either of the people that we're talking about here? But we can't go into that. This is really a judgment call for the jury, right?
Yeah, so as we all know, we look at things differently in life and, you know, what we might see may be completely different to the jury. So we just always have to be super careful. So, yeah, if listeners are sort of, if they're wondering why we're being a little bit mysterious about things, it's not because we want to be, it's because we have to be.
Yeah. And it also sounded like Bryony wasn't, like, you know, 100% sure that the person she was picking out of this lineup were the people that were outside that window anyway, right?
Yeah, she wasn't really sure, and Kevin wasn't really sure either. A bit hesitant. As we know, when you see someone in, you know, the depths of the morning and it's dark, it's really hard, and especially considering this was in March. So as we know, our memories fade, and I'm not sure that they'd suspect that they would be giving evidence over that, you know?
Yeah. You're not imagining at the time, oh, I should remember what these people look like, because
exactly.
Maybe I'll be giving evidence in a murder trial in 4 years'
twist.
Time. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, so it's been kind of an interesting few days, certainly from the perspective of being and understanding who Jeffrey McLean was. And, I mean, we're talking through a lot of evidence in chief at the moment. So this is all evidence that is being adduced by the prosecuting team. We haven't had you know, much cross-examination of these witnesses yet. We spoke about Mari Shaw the other day. She was cross-examining one of the forensics guys. And then Bill Boko, he asked a few questions to Darren Tang. He's the guy that owned the bin that the body of Jeffrey McLean was ultimately found in. And I just want to confirm, you know, we're not talking about the defence barristers deliberately. They're just not kind of doing much at the moment, right, Eva?
Yeah, so there's nothing wrong with that. They're given the option at the end of each witness to cross-examine, and we hear them go, no cross-examination. They all sort of pop their heads up and tell Justice Kimber, and, yeah, it is what it is. So here and there we'll hear from them along the way, but, yeah, we're not deliberately just favouring the prosecution.
Yeah, and the way you say that as well, like they pop their heads up. We've talked about the bar table in this courtroom. You know, we have four different defence teams. We have seven different defence barristers. We also have two prosecution barristers. We have a whole bunch of instructing solicitors as well. So there's a heap of people on that bar table. What is it like? I mean, I'm imagining kind of like the way you've described it, just sort of like heads popping up as that's asked. Is this just sort of like a straight run down the table, you know, at the end of a witness? Any cross-examination? No, 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 no?
Yeah, but pretty much, but just sort of layout-wise, there's actually two different rows.
Right.
So in that front row, we have Melissa, the prosecutor, and her junior.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also have Mari Shaw and her junior. And then behind them, that's where we have Bill Boko, his junior, Ryan Williams, his junior, and then Lynette Sexton's barrister. So we're all, it's all a bit, the popping's a little bit more graded, more graded than that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's a tiered system.
Yeah.
I wonder if there was a ballot or something so he gets to sit in the front row or if he's just decided, okay, no, Marie Shaw, you can go here. Bill Boko, sorry, you're a row behind us here. Eva, we finished our episode on Tuesday talking about a jury location visit. They went to the vacant lot on Cheviot Road, which is where the wheelie bin with the body of Jeffrey McLean was found. They went to Cherie Glastonbury's house where she lived with Jeffrey McLean, and also to Mark and Peter Murphy's and Lynette Sexton's house. I think there's an opportunity where we can probably clarify something that we were talking about in the episode on Tuesday. We were talking about the evidence from the contractor where he said the vacant lot is around 20 acres, which, as I described, is actually quite big. You could fit 80 houses in that space if you're working with quarter acre blocks. And yes, it did take me 2 days to do that math, so I could actually give you that number. Now the jury has visited. So the jury's been there. They have seen this place. We can't kind of interpret what they have seen, but what I would say is that lot is probably a little bit smaller than you may have been expecting. It is more the size of a vacant lot that you would expect to see in an otherwise kind of populated industrial estate. So just giving you some context there. We are getting a heap of questions sent into the case of Eva. If you are interested or if you have any questions about this, please get in touch. You can email thecaseof@abc.net.au. Eva is a wealth of knowledge on this trial and is happily and very willing to answer all of your questions. We have one here from Sarah who says, this might be a weird one, but what happened to the wheelie bin? I guess it wouldn't have been returned to the owners, but would it be kept as evidence or destroyed?
Well, I can say if I were the owners of that wheelie bin, I would not be wanting it back. No, I'm not actually sure what's happened with the wheelie bin. We haven't heard in the trial, so the jury's not sure. Sort of the latest we know about the bin is it being taken for the forensic testing. So, yeah, Sarah, we may or may not hear, but watch this space.
Yeah, no, we'll keep you updated on the various movements of the wheelie bin of Darren and Fiona Tang. Also, thank you for understanding as well that, you know, we can't answer all of your questions at this point in the trial. There's a lot of things the jury hasn't heard, and we can only talk about what the jury has heard. But keep them coming. You can email us at thecaseof@abc.net.au. And we have, you know, a little marker system in there to track all of the ones that we can come back to at a later stage. So if it's something that you're not emailing because you think we can't answer it, send it through. We'll save it. Put it in the folder for post-trial coverage or something. So, yeah, it won't get lost. Eva, what's coming up? Where are we up to in the trial?
We'll be hearing a little bit more from Alan and some more of those golf friends. Sounds like Jeffrey did have a really nice community with the people he played golf with. So we should be getting more of a picture of the man that Jeffrey was. And a bit later in the week, we may actually get to some evidence about that incident where Jeffrey McLean was allegedly hit on the head with the log splitter. So that's the incident that Cherie Glastonbury and Mark Murphy are charged with attempted murder over.
Yeah. If you want to catch up on some of the other details of this trial. We have, this is our third episode of the case of the Wheelie Bin murder. Jump back into our first episode on Thursday last week. So we went through the openings from the prosecution. We talked through the allegations that the prosecution is making of previous assaults towards Geoffrey McLean, which they say were orchestrated by Cherie Glastonbury with Mark Murphy, a participant in two of them. It's the allegation from the prosecution. Eva, we've got kind of a few delays we're working with, legal argument and legal discussion yesterday afternoon, and the judge, Justice Kimber, did flag delays at the start of the trial. This is going to kind of be a bit stop-start at times, right?
Yeah, so the jury's been given a calendar of dates that they won't be sitting. Look, this is for various reasons. In the Sir Samuel Way building, in the court building, this courtroom is the only ceremonial courtroom.
Right.
So, for example, yesterday we actually had a late start as well because we had a special sitting for our now former Chief Justice, his retirement.
Right.
So it's little things like that. It's also the courtroom used for admission ceremonies. So there will just be little things that pop on up that may interrupt the flow of the trial.
And at admission ceremonies, that's when there's like a barrister getting that little wig and the robes. Is that right?
Yeah, or it's just really, yeah, not barristers necessarily, just law students becoming lawyers.
Ah.
So, yeah, they just get their little certificate and, well, not little, it's a big certificate really. They get their certificate. So, yeah.
Yeah, cute little law degree. yeah, that's obviously much more substantial than that. We've dramatically undersold it. Please don't email any feedback about that to the case on abc.net.au. Eva, we do have a lot going on. So, yeah, look, luckily some more delays with this. It may be that we end up kind of dipping in and out of the case of the Wheelie Bin murder as we go forward. There's actually a trial in the ACT at the moment that we have our eyes on that's sounding really interesting. Elizabeth Byrne, who we had on the pod a couple of weeks ago covering that one, and Sebastian, who has emailed the case of at abc.net.au, pointing out that we haven't done a trial in the ACT yet. Well, your prayers may be answered. Also, unfortunately, Sebastian, don't have any insight into your other question around why we've done several in South Australia, but people can draw their own conclusions around that. As we are looking at this one going forward, all the other things that are going on around the country in various courts, the best place to keep up with all this is on ABC Listen. So get on that, go to your prescribed app store, get it, tell your friends, rate and review the case of if you're listening on another platform. Eva, thank you so much for joining us for this episode.
Thank you for having me, Stocky.
The Case of the Wheelie Bin Murder is produced by ABC Audio Studios and ABC News. This episode was reported by Eva Blandis and presented by me, Stephen Stockwell. Our supervising producer is Greg Muller and our executive producer is Claire Rawlinson. Thank you to senior lawyer, our legal queen, Jasmine Sims, for her legal advice, to the South Australian Newsroom, and also to Audio Studios manager, Eric George. This episode was produced on the land of the Kaurna and Wurundjeri people.